Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I am Stan Mason. Got two of our hosts here. The other ones may be joining. Everybody, Hattie Bench, and this has been like a circus week for all of us. Let me say, first off, I got to give a shout out to Rudy Cantu at Rock Ready Printing because I got to Waco and Rudy hooked me up with a couple of new hoodies for me to bring back here, you know, to Atlanta, so I have something to keep me warm and stylish, you know, this year. I want to say to everybody in Waco, there were so many of you guys I wanted to see when I was there. I didn't have an opportunity to see you. Don't think I don't love you. I just, you know, my time was real crunched. And to the people that I did see, just walking down the street, you know, I mean, I felt a lot of love and appreciation there, and it did me good to see you guys doing so well, you know, despite trying times there. So I enjoyed my brief time that I was there in Waco. I miss you guys already. I've been back here like a day. I got back yesterday, and I still miss you guys. You know, I want to hit the ground running. So I'm like, you know, we'll get back. I'm getting back Friday. You know, I want to get a show. We got to do something. Because we didn't do one last week because I had things to prepare for. And we keep like on, you know, we have a open staff meeting, social text, whatever, that we all on the show here, we keep going all the time. So we're always bouncing stuff off of each other, how we feel and emotions and everything. And that's how a lot of our topics develop. But before we get into what we're going to talk to today, you know, I got my two co-hosts here. The other ones may be popping in. Isidoro can't make it. He's got to do husband chores today. So I'm definitely stepping out of the way to let him do those. But I got to go down and say good morning to Claire. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Happy to be here. Glad to have a show going on this week, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. How's Liv doing?
She's doing good. She's busy, so that's a good thing.
Because we got to get her one day to come on and say hi, because she's part of this show because you're part of this show. You know?
She will.
So she's a big part of it. Then, of course, we got to go up to our resident chief in the house. Good morning, chief.
Good morning, everybody. Glad to be here. You know, the co-host, we're in our open text message chat, what you call it, meeting.
Yeah.
Of course, I hope they have the ability to come in today. Everybody's kind of got stuff on the burners, you know, as we all know. And even myself, I'll have to duck out a little early today because I've got an event that I got to go to. So, but excited to be here. And, again, like Claire said, I'm glad we're having a show this week. Last week was kind of weird. I didn't know what to do for the last 2 hours. So
now, you know, there's so much that's going on because, you know, we try to stay on top of everything. We missed last week, and so much has developed. There's so much out there right now, and we try not to be the voice on every little topic. We would much rather take what is trending, let everybody else be first and get their ratings and views and likes and talking points. And then we like to come back and just grab a little bit of it and break it down and make it understandable and offer solutions. And before we even get to, because I wanted to really talk about this vaccination issue in reference to first responders, particularly police and fire, and more particularly police. But before we can even get to that, you know, Chief, you did something that to me personally was monumental. And it's something we've talked about several times on this show. We always talk about it. We harp it. We beat it into the woodwork. And that is whistleblower protection. And what exactly is a whistleblower? If you would, take your time and go into that. And if anybody wants to call in, the number is 646-716-4621. If you press 1 on your phone, we will bring you in. And we'll get you up front. We got Big Joe getting ready to come in here. And we'll get you on. And now when you come on this show, you know, you're not limited to 1 minute and thank you for calling goodbye. That's not how we do this show here. When you come on here, as long as you're making sense, you're articulate, you don't have to agree with us. But as long as you can add to the discussion, you're in the show. We're very unique here. But Chief, I wanna ask you, you know, because you went out on a big limb and you did something that many of the major police departments experimented with, but very few have it in their policy. And if you would, can you just tell everybody what you feel a whistleblower is and why you felt compelled to do that?
Well, you know, and honestly, a lot of that has come from this show. You know, when we talk about that topic, if you think about organizations' policies, particularly when we're talking about city and or law enforcement, public safety, you know, everybody has a policy somewhere in there that relates to, say, sexual harassment or drug usage in the workplace or alcohol, blah, 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 you know, stuff like that. And each one of those policies, if you really look at it and you break it down, specifically sexual harassment, there is technically whistleblower protection in there, supposedly, right? Because there usually is a statement somewhere in there that has some sort of anti-retaliation, right? And so the agency or the organization should protect the individual that brings that matter forward. Okay, so that's where it really starts. But what we're seeing is there are many other things other than just sexual harassment per se that need to be brought forward where there is no technical protection for the individual that brings that information forward. They have the potential to be retaliated against. And you know, we know that it's there. We know that it's out there. There are several individuals that, I mean, you can read about it, you know, online in the media about people being retaliated against bringing things. And then in the context of this show, like prejudices or racially motivated policing, you know, or we see acts in law enforcement where we're not necessarily following the law. We're worried about policing somebody by the color of their skin or their national origin or sexual orientation or whatever. And so other individuals bring those things forward to complain, and then that individual basically gets retaliated against within the organization, promotions, you know, discipline, you know, all kinds of stuff. So what Stan is talking about, so I won't be too long-winded, is that got that echo. In addition to those little caveats in policy that are within our organization, the city, this is actually the city, this isn't just the police department, this is the city as a whole, has enacted a full-blown whistleblower protection policy in our new policy. I mean, we're in the middle of rewriting our policy manual, but it's a whistleblower protection policy for the entire organization. Which is big. I know that there are organizations out there that have it. I think they're few and far between, but I believe that we felt as an organization that was so important, because if we're going to ask our employees to do the right thing and speak up when they see something that is wrong, right, either in action, through action or through inaction, they've got to have some level of protection to come forward. And I think even any basic leadership will tell you that if you can't protect your people to tell you the truth and bring it forward, then they're not going to come bring it forward. And that's the problem with these issues, is that if you can't protect your folks, then they're going to turn a blind eye and they're not going to say anything about it. And that becomes a major issue. So it is a big thing. I don't know of any local entity that has this policy other than us. I think it's coming. I think a lot of places will be picking this up, as much as we have discussed that particular topic with the whistleblower. So I look and feel that there will be many organizations that start to follow this trend, because it just enhances things that are already in policy that should already be adhered to. I guess that's in a nutshell, that's pretty much what it is.
I have a question. So how do you plan on, or in your policy, does it state how you plan on protecting those people that are whistleblowers?
Well, it depends on what is happening. But basically, they get full and equal protection against retaliation. Retaliation, disciplinary issues.
So what does that consist of?
Well, I mean, it would be the organization that you would fall into a protected class, technically. So you would fall into a protected class within the organization. So you, things would have to be very mindful. And again, it's hard to define, right? So that person sort of becomes protected. Like if they reported sexual harassment federally, you can't retaliate against an individual that reports sexual harassment, if, ands, or buts. Now, there's a difference between actual discipline and or performance evaluation. That's a whole separate deal. You know, you still have to do your job. You can't just say, well, I report sexual harassment, so I'm going to do anything, right? And I think everybody agrees that. But so I think there's a more calculated look, and I think with the organization, the way that it would work is a lot of that whistleblower protection would fall under more through human resources and the city management team. Mm-hmm. Than just say the department head, and that's where it's at. It takes it to a completely different level. But that whistleblower protection then provides several other layers above the city, particularly I think even at the federal level, where if you didn't adhere to the whistleblower protection, then lawsuits could be filed, and therefore the city could be held accountable for not protecting that individual. So, in a nutshell, and again, it's. The policy is not, you know, we talked about whistleblower, and that sounded very complex, what I said. And the policy is not very big. It's not a whole lot of information. It's actually very, very simple. So, you know, yeah, we haven't had this yet. And not that I'm even aware of has our organization had this issue where somebody had to go into the whistleblower category. We've always, and again, don't get me wrong, as an organization, as we operate, you know, over the last, at least when I've been here the last 11 years, have we had people come forward and file a sexual harassment complaint or file, you know, some type of complaint? And did we protect them? Yeah, we did. I mean, so you just have to be very mindful. It takes it to another step and it provides different protections, I think, for that individual employee, specifically outside the city level to the state level and or the federal level.
Now, Chief, if I can interject, because I want to make sure that the listeners understand the significance. As officers, we grasp it. We see how important this is. But if I break it down to the basic citizen and says, well, why is this so monumental? It's extremely relevant because we've heard the cliche terms when we've seen officer misconduct, blatant officer misconduct. It's a few bad apples. And this is just, I'm speaking for Stan. And I said, you know, over my 25 years of watching this decay of officer-citizen relations, not a few bad apples. The bushel is rotten. The apple cart needs repair, but it's not to say the orchard is bad. And I say that to say, you know, when this whole thing over the last 5, 6, 7 years that police reform has really been in the forefront and we've really been pushing police reform, from the politicians to even people who I personally believe don't even believe in police reform, but it's politically correct to do so, and they want to be elected, so they jump on the bandwagon. But the community has this false sense of security that somehow we are going to legislate police reform. And I have said from the beginning, you are not going to legislate police reform because the institution, the profession of policing, not any individual officer, not any individual department. The institution is inherently resistant to change. They don't like change, whether it's everybody's got to come in the side door in front of the front door. We sit in roll call, they grumble about that. We're buying Fords instead of Chevys. They grumble about that. So when we get to this level of reform, it makes everybody nervous. And so for you to recognize that, to say, you know, we need police reform because, A, if we see a Derek Chauvin, we see a bad actor, just an absolute horrible human being, do something. What made that case? Yes, the video was compelling. But when you had officers from that department and chiefs that stood up and said, yes, this is wrong, yes, this is a violation of policy, yes, this should not have happened, that is solid. That is truthful. That is good. So I think whistleblower protection provides, instead of character assassinating the officer because he or she felt compelled to say, this is wrong and this is why, it now makes the system have to look at it. And you were absolutely right when you said it encompasses the your city structure. Because I'll be honest here, the feds don't care about Hewitt or Waco or Bellmead or Dallas, Austin or whatever. Because when that lawsuit hits, they're not paying the money. So for you to step out there and do what you did, to the level you did it, you know, that to me, that was extremely progressive. And I'm not surprised that you would be on the cutting edge of that. But we're looking at the George Floyd Justice Crime Bill. It basically has stalled. And for all intents and purposes, it's forgotten. Though many states have enacted most of what is in there, the bill itself has been forgotten. Because without whistleblower protection, and I've said on this show many times, the two things that I wish were in that bill that were not in that bill, if we're going to talk police reform, you've got to understand that officers are part of the community. Maybe not yours, but they're part of a community somewhere. And if you don't have whistleblower protection for these officers who can be witnesses to events, and if you don't have mental health treatment for officers who have to endure these nightmares time in and time out, that's not true police reform or justice, as the George Floyd Justice Bill. It's not. Because there were a lot of officers who viewed what happened in the George Floyd incident. They weren't there. They might have been in another state, you know, 1,000 miles away. But they got abused on the street. They had to deal with the verbal abuse, the humiliation. They had nothing to do with it. So for you to do what you did, I mean, dude, that's off the chain. That's impressive.
Well, and the other thing is, I think everybody needs to understand, is there is not a one-size-fits-all solution to this what we consider this reform issue. You know, we can have some overall very vague tenets in reform, but individually, and you know, you and I spoke the other night, it comes back down to that local level. That's where the importance becomes. What is going to be important for the community? And what's the reform for that particular area? You know, there are communities across this country that have some very significant issues that I don't have in my community. So when we start talking about these reform things, there's a lot to it. I 100% agree with you, whistleblower protection and God dang it, mental health. I cannot stress that enough.
Mm-hmm.
That has got to be part of this deal. And again, I think people lose sight that, you're right. We are part of the community. We live in the community. We don't all get boxed up at the end of the shift and go, you know, stand around in our uniforms at some location. We actually go home to our families as well. So, you know, that's part of this whole program, the protection that can be afforded. And again, I'm going to say that even if it's technically, and I think this is important, this may sound very silly and goofy, but even if the report, i.e. let's say police misconduct is not true. Let's say an employee comes up and makes a report of police misconduct against another police employee, and it turns out that that's not true. Well, the whistleblower protection also prohibits retaliation for that. I'm not talking about a false complaint, right? There's other things that will happen as far as discipline on that issue if they make something up. But something that they perceive as not being right, but the agency doesn't, a full actual investigation or another outside agency does an investigation, it also prevents that retaliation against that employee as well. So, you know, again, it puts everybody on an even keel and affords that protection. And I know I've said that, it sounded silly, but I have seen that. I have seen where somebody's brought a complaint. It wasn't actually if the complaint was perceived or seen. And you know, the investigation ruled out that deal. And you know, I had, before whistleblower protection, I had to have some hard, strong conversations with individuals and said, I'm going to explain to you that if you go back after this person, I am going to fire you.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, that's part of organizational culture. You're just going to have to do that sometime, you know?
And you know, Let's just go with that retaliation part just for a second here, because the community, and I've always said this, and this is just Stan's opinion, but so many people think they know policing. Well, my husband's a cop or my wife's a cop. You don't know. 90% of this job, we only talk to with other cops. And then within that realm, very few. There's a lot to this culture, and policing is a culture. There's a lot to this culture that a lot of people don't know, and some of it is the community's fault for not seeking answers, and a lot of it is policing's fault for not being forthcoming and transparent to answers. And I say to the community, you don't get to rant and rave when you haven't tried to research. And to the police, you don't get to be the victim all the time. Well, you just don't understand me. You don't understand what we do. We risk our lives for you. Well, there are people in communities across America risking their lives just to go to the store, and they're paying taxes. So that becomes a moot point. But, you know, I think that when we talk about whistleblower protection and why it is so important, it is the keystone of police reform. It really is. There are hundreds of thousands of good officers across this country. These are good men and women who want to say something, who want to do something, but they know as soon as they say something, it's not about race. People like to make it about race. It has nothing to do with the race. When they say something, we have our internal mechanisms to self-protection mode that kicks in. And when it kicks in, you immediately become the outcast first. Then it's the complaints or whatever. And I think for you to do that, and I can say at least for your city, those officers that work for you can now feel comfortable that I can now tell so-and-so just at the car, hey, man, don't do that no more with me. Don't do that. You're putting us both out there. And I think to your citizens in your city, they ought to applaud you because guess what? You can now get maybe an extra picnic bench in the park. You may be able to get a sidewalk over here because you're not paying for all these lawsuits.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, you robbed a very good point. We talked about Chauvin earlier. I honestly believe, and there are many problems with his agency, but had there been a whistleblower protection policy and it were enforced correctly, I'm not necessarily sure we would have ever known about the George Floyd incident. I mean, that's the key. That's the key to it. Because, again, we already know that we know the history, and I'm not going to beat this horse anymore, but the guy has a lot of problems in his jacket, right? Enough that, you know, after number one or number two, probably should have had some more significant discipline. But, you know, and again, we talk about unions and agreed upon suspensions and disciplines and whatever else may be allowed for them in the law. But I think that those are the ones that were caught. I mean, you understand what I'm saying. Those
right.
are the ones that
right.
were caught.
And make no mistake about it, though. I think we can all agree. And Joe, are you here with us?
He's here. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, yeah.
Here in spirit.
Yeah, we got your audio, so yeah, brother, you can chime in. I was just making sure. But, you know, Chief, let's just say this, and I want to make this very clear to citizens and more so municipalities, the local administration. Let's be honest about, if we leave this show and communities don't get anything else from this show, I hope they understand this. When you, as an officer, male, female, gay, straight, black, white, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. When you get into that job and you get out there and you hear rumors about this person or that person, you get about to your 3, 4, 5-year period. You know who's rotten and you know who isn't, because when you get a call with that person, your antenna goes up. Oh, man, am I going to get sued? You know who they are. And these are men and women who make up the vast majorities of police departments. Good people. This is 85% of most departments. They know who's right. They don't speak up because of, as the chief said earlier, retaliation. Retaliation is real. I told someone, I said, I take the profession of policing as far as the internal structure that the community is not aware of, that's not on paper anywhere, but that most of us know exists. It's is the same as the mafia. You don't talk about the family, and if you do, you're a rat. It doesn't matter how right you are, and we will come after you. And because that protection isn't there, we end up running into this. Joe, you want to get in here, brother?
Well, it's interesting, the whole whistleblower thing. Again, we've hammered this, I don't know how many times, but right now in the city of Chicago, there's two major lawsuits being pursued by officers who took a stance on cases. And as a result, they were moved from their assignments. Both of them, actually, one chief is being named in both lawsuits, so there's a nexus there. They have proven in preliminary findings that the movement was retaliatory and that unwarranted, which is basic what you need in your case for whistleblower protection. The questions have come up over there. The question arises, what was the eight overarching thing? We can prove it. See how you injured. And, you know, unlike civil suits, this has a lot more meat to it. And what I mean by that, there are a lot more issues that go into it as opposed to just a regular civil suit for, let's say, slander or libel. But again, can they prove damages? And yes, you can prove damages by, again, your movement. But going back to the point of whistleblower protection, again, we've hammered this, Chief, all of us, we've talked about this from the beginning. And it's interesting because here we are, what, a year later, and you did it. I mean, the reality is that nobody else was talking about this until we did. If I remember correctly, they still haven't talked about it on the national level, which is actually more scary.
You're 100%. And again, that's why, you know, I made that comment to Sam when on the phone the other night as we were having this conversation. This begins at the local level. If the federal government is not going to do it for you, and it's just not going to happen. So if your organization is that interested in it, then it's going to have to happen at the local level. That's the only place it's going to be. And I'd be kind of scared of the federal system anyway, but you know, it's just, but
right.
Well, you know, yeah, and I want to go kind of back to what Stan was talking about, because and we talked, it seems to come up almost every week about culture, the culture of law enforcement, culture of these departments. And that's a lot of the key to this. And I go again, back to the previous statement, you know, there's not a one size fits all approach to each law enforcement entity. It's got to be individual, right? Now, there's a lot of cultural issues in law enforcement or public safety that need to be changed, and they're broad, right? And you can actually change those. But I go back, and I'm going to say again, changing the culture, being fair and firm within an organization, right, in enforcing the law. Doing all the things that we have to do in our organizations, law enforcement, but yet creating an environment where your own employees, I'm not going to say safe space, but feel free to come talk to somebody about a problem that's occurring within the organization is how this is supposed to be. Now, will 100% of your employees feel like, oh, hey, I can go walk up and tell the chief anything? No, they won't, because of the paramilitary organization that we've got, we start talking about chain of command, blah, blah, blah. But they should be able to feel free enough to go tell somebody and then feel confident that they will take that information and move it to where it needs to go and not sit on it. So in many cases that I see, when we start talking about these excessive use of force, of bias-based policing in any form, they don't get pushed to where they need to go. Somebody at that middle management level stops it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm gonna throw this out there. The organization should probably blindfold their employees. How mm-hmm. safe do you feel on bringing major complaints of the supervision?
You know, Chief,
that will tell you the key right there. But again, that's not just law enforcement. That's organizational leadership. I mean, that's for almost any organization. we have a little more because of what we do, right? We're subjected to something completely different. But why is the organizational culture, why should it be different in law enforcement than it is anywhere else? I understand because of the job. But what I'm talking about is when we have problems, why is it that in law enforcement those problems don't get pushed? Or if they do get pushed, they get stopped. That's a cultural issue.
I'm glad you brought that up. The problem that I see is it's really twofold, threefold. First of all, you cannot use business acumen and public sector employment.
Fine.
We oftentimes hear and watch, when they do training for management, oh, this is how the Fortune 500 companies do it. That does not work in public sector employment. Just as, a perfect segue for the next topic, the COVID issue, which we will get to. The understanding that public sector employees are different and unique set of employees has not been done. Because, again, just like you said, that everything's not a fit-all, perfect fit. Neither is this thing called what they call leadership training. You cannot train a guy in Fortune 500 and expect him or her to transition into public sector employment, mm-hmm. particularly law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Where it gets crossed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I would stand on that. I would put money on that any day, and that's the problem.
You know, Joe.
These great ideas. Even if we use community police, as you said, what fits in one community is not going to fit in.
Amen, brother.
Same way that we have to approach this thing called law enforcement. Whistleblower and everything else, because it is not the same in every instance.
No, Joe, you know what? I'll tell you what, brother, you read my mind. We're tapping in today because you know what? In reference to what the chief said and in line with what you said, and I'm glad you introduced, and we're not going to go down the whole community policing rabbit hole, but you inserted something that was the backside of something the chief said that made me write it down. You know, when in the 90s, when Waco was basically, for all intents and purposes, I forgot to give the caveat earlier, you will hear colorful metaphors, agitated adjectives, better known as curse words here on the show here and then. When Waco was a shithole, it was a drug den and murder capital of Texas. That's 100% true. Y'all go research it or ask somebody to live there. They gave us this money, a grant, and this concept of community policing. And we were dealing with the Titanic where there were more people in the water drowning and getting eaten than there were left on the ship. And it was saved us. Commander Claire Crook at that time, she did something that to me was ingenious. Claire did not take the police. We had the answers. This is your answers. This is what you all in the community need to do. And she didn't go out to these so-called community leaders, whether they were preachers, politicians, or pontificators, and asked them what they thought. She did a poll through the water bill system. Everybody gets a water bill. Businesses get if you have a business, you get a water bill at the business. If you have a house, you get a water bill at your house. And rate the Waco Police Department. Rate us, on a scale of 1 to 5, how we do our job, what you'd like to see. And that was amazing because what that allowed, and we went through the city water system because what that gave us access to and what it allowed us to do is take all this feedback and break it down by council district, school district, beats, districts, voting zones. And so we were able to get a better idea instead of saying, well, this part of the city loves us. We can go in and find out that this particular demographic doesn't. So it gave us hitting the ground and understanding that, we're not loved by everybody and we're not hated by everybody and we got work to do. So what is the common denominator where this district loves what we're doing, but this section of that district doesn't? Why not? So we were able to tailor and have a better understanding of what we were going to attack. And then what the chief said and you said, when we talk about whistleblowers, police departments, we love to have statistics. We love stats. When they benefit us because we want a grant or we want accreditation or we want this or that, we love that part of it. But when we do these forensic what they call forensic autopsies of the department. We're going to look at ourselves. I personally don't believe there's a police department in this country capable of investigating itself and being 100% transparent. Not because their heart isn't in it, but because their feelings get hurt. Goes back to whistleblowers. When that whistleblower speaks up, this isn't a one-time incident that whistleblower is talking about. It's oftentimes a systemic problem, not just within the department, but oftentimes within the city. And the one block that gets left out of this, you know, we can talk about the chief and then we can go to the city manager. But when we're talking about a lot of these problems within the department and disciplining officers, you have the police union over here. Joe, you're 100% right. Powerful entity. And then we have city legal over here, because who is the city manager and the mayor listening to? City legal. So somewhere there in lies, and Joe, you are 1,000% right. We do not get an honest, true assessment of ourselves as a department, not a section or unit, an overall department. And then come out, we don't have to come out and apologize, say, let's just fix it and move on. But you can't do that. You can be a homicide detective. You can be, I'm an assistant chief. So what? Who the hell cares that you're an assistant chief? You know what I am, chief? I'm above you because I'm a public servant. I am out there at ground zero with the rape victim, with the homeless person, with the drug addicted person. I know firsthand how they feel because they told me. Not a study, not a staff meeting. And that is where I believe that we have to be able to have these whistleblowers that may not always be, let's get an officer in trouble and fire an officer. A whistleblower may be somebody that comes and says, you know what, this policy that may have gone through council, that may have gotten voted in and introduced to us the roll call to go out and enforce, and 80% of us are sitting in roll call, and we're thinking to ourselves, this is bullshit. This has not only made my job harder, it's also made this person's living condition harder, but it looked good on paper.
I just got to add that it's interesting because if we look at, I mean, all of us on this board know one thing. When we came on the job, you know, damn well, everybody knows positions of power should not have been there. Can we agree on that?
Absolutely.
So problem one. sorry about that. But the other at least that I see is with the whistleblower protection, it gives you another reporting system. Now think about this. You cannot go tell on or be a whistleblower to somebody else's family. Now listen to what I just said. How many times have we seen those units that are still connected to the people you're talking about? That's where the problem lies. When we talk about trust and all that, that's a deeper conversation that we have to have. I have a policy of an open door. However, that open door does not mean you can come in and call my command staff, whatever, liars, whatever else. That's not what it means. It means that you can come and talk. We can have a conversation. But it also means that you understand that, A, you understand the chain of command, and B, you understand that this place, there is a safe haven, for lack of a better term. Does it always work? Hell no. Everybody on this board knows, again, and I go back to the very base point, how are you going to tell on somebody and you're talking to their cousin and you know it? So with the whistleblower protection, at least what I've read from Chief Douglas, is it gives them another avenue, another reporting system. And that's the key. The fact that you can go outside the system without being labeled violating the chain of command, there's the key.
You know, Charles.
And that was important that was in there, because it's exactly what you said. Even though I have an open door policy, does it work? No, it doesn't. I mean, I've had an open door policy since I've been in this business. So not everybody is freely running up in there, hey, this is going on, this is going on. And it's because of there's another dynamic there. It gives them an additional avenue, right, to make that report, to get this process started. And I think that was a very, very important fact to have into that policy.
You know, Chief, and I know that you keep yourself available. the men and women that work for you. And Joe, and you're interacting as a chief. I think I know you well enough to know your door is not only going to be open, but you're going to have a doorstop in front of it so they make sure they see you. But I think in a lot of police departments, and I haven't been to a lot of them, I'll just say from personal experience, a lot of chiefs say I have an open door policy.
And it's not.
But it's 9 to 5. Now, for those of us that work midnights, not only is your door closed, but the lights are off. And so even if we make the time during our day of whatever it is we got to do and decide to come up and talk to the chief, then we got to hope the chief is there. For a lot of us, when we go to the secretary and say it's the chief and he's busy, he's got an appointment, he or she's not there. And I understand that point. So I would say if the chief knows Officer so-and-so wanted to see you, out of the clear blue. And me, if I were Officer so-and-so, I don't expect you to clear your schedule to talk to me. But I do expect you to email me or contact me somehow and say, is everything okay? I'm sorry I missed you. You still want to talk to me. This is the time and this is the date. Because I think that the misconception that the public gets because of what we put out there is that officers can always go talk to the chief. And that's not true. And I think that it's incumbent upon chiefs who represent those officers, those men and women who make or break not just their reputation, but the city. Because I don't care what city you live in, who has money and who is an investor, there are citizens, tourists, visitors, whatever, that are dealing with that man or woman on the street. It doesn't matter how great the restaurant was, the amusement park was great, the concert was great. They had that one negative interaction with that one officer, and your city sucks. So I think a lot of chiefs, and I know when you got 3,000-4,000 officers, you can't do it. It's not practical. But you have assistant chiefs. You have captains. You have majors. You have enough structure to where that officer should be able to feel, while I did not talk to the chief, I talked to somebody high enough that my complaint was heard or my discomfort was heard. And I think the philosophy that officers should only be able to have access to the chief when they have a complaint is inherently an issue, because if I'm at the point of a complaint, I'm already pissed off. I should feel as an officer that when I'm uncomfortable with a situation or a policy, that I can come, because you may say, this is why we do this. I may walk out and go, you're absolutely right. I support that policy 1,000%. But I think between the line officer on the street, that man or woman on the street doing the job, and the higher up you go in the structure, the quieter the officer's voice becomes. But everybody wants to say, you are the backbone of the department. You guys make or break the department. Go ahead, Joe.
Can I jump in? Jim, forgive me for what I'm about to say. But the fact of the matter remains, all these organizations take on the persona of the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got a shit leader, you got a shit operation. I don't have to name department names. You see them in the newspaper. So kudos to gentlemen. Because the fact of the matter is they have taken on his personality in that everybody wants to get it, which is, that's why it's called public service. But more to the fact that from what I've seen and what I've read, because I read, I do read a lot, not just comic books, but the fact that his deputies and all the rest of them have a Jim Devlin attitude, you know, let's give back, and that's important. And that's where I have a problem with the majority of these new chiefs, superintendents, because if you look at, and let me just drop one. McCarthy was an abysmal failure here in Chicago. He was an abysmal failure in New York. He got into domestic, he shoots out lights, but then he comes here and he's holy as a thou. How can you come to a department, be holy as a thou, and then try to hang everybody else? Just can't be done. That's not leadership by example. That's leadership by proxy. And again, there's a problem. You know, they bring these guys in for different organizations, and they have no backbone. They're not given as the things they need to succeed. And I think in a lot of cases, they don't really want to succeed because they don't want to take time to learn the culture of where they come.
You know, Joe, but what you said now, right now, is important because you and I, about a year ago, we had this conversation, this very conversation on the impact of a chief on a troop. We had this conversation, and what you just said was exactly what you said over a year ago. If you want to know the opinions of the chief, not his political beliefs or whatever, if you want to know his structural, his guidance, his leadership, watch his people. You know, there's a chief that personally a lot of people don't like him. I happen to like him, Art Acevedo, who was chief in Austin first, capital of Texas. And Art Acevedo was progressive. He was forward moving. He was very in touch with the community. He was very progressive in that if the officers were wrong, he'd get rid of them. He left there. He went to Houston. His philosophy and practice of being a chief followed him there. And I happen to like the guy. I don't like everything about him, but 80% I love the guy as a chief, though I've never worked for him. He recently went to Miami. And I said, Art ain't going to last in Florida. He's simply not going to because of the politics and the pressures and the unions that handcuff the chief. And then people said, well, how does all this have to do with whistleblower? Let's go back. Where were the men and women who his decisions that got him a lot of hatred, a lot of public scorn in the upper echelon of the important people? Where were the ground level people who enjoyed the benefits and got the stress off of them because he was willing to take the heat to make the tough decisions? They didn't impact the city immediately, but they made that man or woman that's out there working these calls feel a little bit better, have a little bit more room, have a little bit more resources. This is whistleblower. This is whistleblower, and having that communication where if I worked for either one of you two, I would feel like I could send you a message. Would your schedule clear? Can I get 20 minutes to talk to you? And so, you know, but that knowing that
I was going to say, I mean, I got them coming by my house. I mean, you know, and here's, I want to go back to this kind of what we were talking about with the administration. Isn't it incumbent upon the, and I'm going to say the administration, because that's, if you're in a large agency, that's the chiefs, the superintendents, the whoever you got. But it's incumbent upon those people to meet with their people. I mean, yeah, we work Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and you know we got this going on, we got that going on. But damn it, you got to make the effort to go see nights. And I don't buy the excuse of, well, we've got 3,000 people, 365 days a year. You can make an attempt to go out to deep nights. You can get in a car with somebody. Don't cost nothing. You're the chief. You can schedule when you want to.
And you know
that's leadership. That's what leadership means. I mean, to me, that's what makes the difference. And I guarantee you, and you know, it probably, well, I say it makes a difference with those individuals that are on the road.
Sure.
To have that person come in and listen and say, hey, so what do you think? What do you, you know, hey, we're talking about, I mean, something simple as, hey, we're thinking about changing, you know, taser from this to this. You know, what do you think about this new taser? What, you know, you'll get your opinion on it. And that's where you learn. That's where you learn what you're supposed to be doing in the organization from the people that are doing it. So I don't buy the fact that because you're the superintendent of XYZ police department, yeah, are you going to know all 6,000 officers you got? No, probably not. But you can at least make an attempt to go hit their roll call and their beat and go work with them a little bit, right?
You know, Chief, and to your point, and you're absolutely correct, but I got to ask, you know, out of and I can only go by my experience, but I'll say the officer on the street gets blamed for everything. The sergeant will get wrapped up, and he's going to get blamed. The commander may or may not catch some heat. And then after that, everything goes away. But to the officer's benefit, if you're sitting on a city council somewhere and you're going to hear this show or you're trolling or somebody happens to share it with you, I'm going to ask you something. And I did my time on midnights. Two times that are the scariest for the midnight shift officer is Christmas Eve, because everything is not all is well, all is bright around your virgin mother and child. That's not the truth for us out there. The second night that's the most dangerous for us is New Year's Eve, where people are walking on the front porch, shooting a gun up in the air while you're working a disturbance over here, and you hear gunfire close to you, you're going to turn around with your gun out. It's the one time of the year where we can shoot someone who's merely legally or illegally celebrating the New Year. So I say to all of these people that are on city councils across this country that enjoy the perks of being on a city council. You love the title, you love the free meals, you love the people throwing rose petals at your feet and all that, if you're one of those type of city council people. When is the last time that you showed up at a midnight shift roll call? Not the day shift, not the afternoon shift, because you're on your way home and, gee, it would look great for me to pop in. When's the last time you went in there at 10 o'clock at night and dealt with those men and women who are going out there in the dark to deal with real violence? Because that's when the real violence is happening. You might get a bank robbery in the day when the bank is open, but your domestic disturbances, your drive-by shootings, all the things that are the biggest immediate threat to officer safety, your traffic stops with limited visibility that happen at night. You're a city council person. When's the last time you've been there? But you love the officers. Thank we publicly or within the safety of the city council meetings, we thank them for everything we do and we appreciate them, but you never go there to tell them. Now let's move up to your city managers. Whether it's the city manager over police, whether it's you just have a city manager, whether you have a different structure, even down to the mayor. Mr. Mayor or Mrs. Mayor across this country who love your police. Oh, they're so great. They do all this for us. They take the hits. When is the last time you took your ass to a midnight shift roll call without an entourage, without the media, without the fanfare, and you sat in that roll call? Don't come in when it's time for you to speak. That's bullshit. When is the last time you showed up 20 minutes early for that roll call, just like we show up 30, 40 minutes early for work that we're not getting paid to do? And got a chance to meet these men and women who are out there every night across this country busting their ass in the dark. Everybody reads about the next morning, and you're burning up. I get the chief on the phone. What happened last night? Talk to these men and women. We're people. And I've said this before, and if any officer listens to this show or happens to hear this show, and here's what I'm about to say. If they work midnight shifts like I did, and I loved midnights, they're going to say, you're right. We are the bastard stepchildren that are kept in the basement under the stairs. We are. And so I say that we're talking about whistleblower protection. And I want to say, because I'm not going to let you city council people, and I'm not going to let these city managers and these mayors off the hook, because whistleblower protection is not 9 to 5, it's daytime, and I'm moving around everybody. People that work midnights, whether they are officers or citizens that are victims, they need to be a part of this discussion. And I don't think city governments make enough effort. If you really care, your job does not have to be 9 to 5 every day, Mr. Mayor. Mr. or Mrs. Councilperson, if you really want to know what's going on in your city with crime, with homelessness, with mental health challenges, with officers, with your fire department people who are worn down and beat down, if you really want to know, get your ass out of your living room sometime after hours, because fact of the matter is there are good officers across this country that put more time into the streets and their job that they're not getting paid for, don't put in for, and quite frankly, they don't even mention it. Then you realize, is policing perfect? No, we are not. Are we without fault in all this? No, we are not. But are the majority of us putting in so much time as undocumented. I can't prove I did this. I don't have it on paper. I did it. But nevertheless, if you take your ass to the people, they'll say, I saw Officer so-and-so here at 10 o'clock last night. And he worked station. I saw Officer so-and-so here at, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And they work midnights. The officers are putting in work. I believe the men and women on the street want to reform. Our problem is administration and local politics. And I think that is where the bottleneck is.
Called leadership.
Or lack thereof.
Oh, lack thereof.
And even in the interim, when excuse me, when the council members and the mayor are not out riding around, then it's incumbent upon the chief to have that information that we're talking about, mm-hmm. Officer so-and-so, and informing them that it's happened. And again, they're, you know, council members, I don't expect council members and mayors to ride, you know, 2-3 times a week. You know, they can come out when they want to come out. That's never going to be an issue and ride. But in that interim, in those spans between, it's incumbent upon leadership to paint that picture, to tell that story, is what the organization is doing, right? Praise those individuals that bought that meal for that homeless person or, you know, participated in this event or that event. You know, it's important for that information to get shared so it doesn't seem like all we're doing is writing jakes to put people in jail.
Well, I think it's also incumbent that we stop being labeled as a revenue generator, too. I mean, public perception and reality are two different things. Public sees us, in most cases, as I said, as a revenue generator, and a lot of times so does city administrators. That's not the case, or it shouldn't be the case. The other thing is that our police departments, the adulation doesn't come quick. It doesn't come often enough. But unfortunately, that's business and choke. I mean, if you want adulation, get a puppy. At the same time,
right? Yeah.
You know, the reality is that we do have to do a better job of what we're doing. And the other main topic for me is always going to be, what is the leadership doing? You know, we've got a situation where we're running two or three cars, all priority month calls. Now, for those who don't know what that is, it means that those are shots fired or somebody's hurt. That doesn't give us time to answer the burglary in progress or the burglar alarm or my car just been stolen because it's not a priority one call. But nobody talks about that either because they don't want to hear that. From personal experience, I've heard people say, well, what does that matter? Well, it matters a lot because if your car's running, if your personnel, let's not even talk about the car. What are you doing to your personnel? You burn them out. You're going to have officer burnout. If you look at, just using Chicago as an example, the highest number of retirements ever. And besides that, people not only just retiring, they're lateraling out. So let's use the word attrition. Maybe that would be the better word. But attrition covers everything, from retirements to laterals, whatever else. And that's what you got going in this neck of work. What's going on nationally? Same thing. People are leaving these areas because of lack of support from A, the administration, B, the political system.
Mm-hmm.
For everybody on this board, again, we understand how important it is that we operate with a close relationship with prosecutors. Here we have none. And as a result, that's why you have police officers. In fact, a couple of days ago, the mayor of the city of Chicago put out a call, a mutual aid call, and two sheriffs from two adjoining counties said, we're not spending shit. We don't trust your prosecutor.
Now,
two major law enforcement agencies said, we don't trust your prosecutor. What does that say to the officers that work here in this county?
Mm-hmm.
The county of Cook has 101 suburbs, 101. The state of Illinois has 101 counties. So just look at the numbers. What's going on here? And again, unfortunately, we have to go back to this thing. I hate to beat a wood for a dead horse.
No, go ahead, Jeff.
But the fact is, look at our system. We got people here. Prime example, again, in the newspaper, you can check it out. two people are shooting at each other, drove them to the front of the house. The prosecutor would not charge either. They had two guys fighting on film. One guy gets knocked down, the other guy stabs him to death. Stabs him. He brought a knife to a fist fight. Wouldn't charge because the prosecutor said it was mutual combat. In any other jurisdiction, he would have been charged. So what does that tell your police officers? And you wonder why we have such a, you wonder why we're having a problem? Look at our
Yeah, okay, what it tells them is no matter what you do, we're not going to enforce it anyway.
So that becomes
way more problematic, and then they're going to be like, I'm not even involved in that because they're not going to do anything about it.
Let me give you two more. I got to give you this. You'll love this. They have now enacted a no foot chase policy. No foot chase. They've already enacted a no car chase policy. In our adjoining state of Indiana, they have a sheriff who bought 10 SRT Hellcats, and he put on his Facebook page, if you come, steal a car in Indiana, we don't care where you are, we're chasing you. I applauded the guy. I called him and said, thank you, sir, because no one else was doing that.
Do they have a speed walking policy? Can you speed walk out there?
That's not.
I gotta go to that. What is behind that? What is the thought behind the no foot chase policy?
At that point, though, how do you police at that point? Honestly.
Okay. Let's not be too smart here. it's the truth. I can't make this up. There's a foot chase policy, and there's a no car vehicle chase. Now, I get it.
Oh.
But that's why you have supervisors that call off chase. It is a zero tolerance. They got guys on Facebook filming where they go down the street getting away because they know you can't chase.
You know, Joe, I gotta. This is what gets me with this pendulum. I prefer to call it social reform more than police reform because the community's got a whole lot of reform they need to do. In this whole conversation, and I think it has swung so far that some of these individuals, citizens, whatever, that for all intents and purposes, they're thugs. They're not going to play by the rules. They don't care about the rules. They're going to walk over anybody they can walk over to get what they want. They don't care. Do I believe there are instances where police should not chase? Yes, I do. Would I categorically say across the board they shouldn't? That's bullshit. No, I wouldn't. You know, but the community, you have to understand it. Anything we do, there is an inherent risk. And when I say we, I don't mean the police. I mean we as human beings. You cross the street when the little hand says, come on. You're running the risk that somebody that doesn't care about that hand is going to make a right-hand turn to take you out. You know, go ahead, bro.
It's interesting. Here's the real key to that. There is a consequence. Listen to that word. There's a consequence for your action. Here, there's no consequences for bad behavior. So how do you tell officers to go out and do these jobs when there's no consequences for bad actors?
Well, you know what, Joe, and I challenge, you're right, you said bad actors, and I agree with you, but I would challenge that there are consequences. It's unfair because when you choose, remember when Spider-Man refused to act and the guy, he had all his superpowers and he said, I'm not getting involved. And that very same guy killed his Uncle Ben. When you tell your men and women in your department, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, you can't do that. So they say, okay, I'm not going to do it. But then they're in a lawsuit because the guy you didn't chase for robbing the liquor store went back to his girlfriend's house, picked out his girlfriend, or you all showed up, or we showed up, and throughout the course of whatever, we have knowledge that this guy just committed an armed robbery. It's developed into a hostage situation. He's shot. Now people want to protest, why was he shot? Why did y'all talk him out? So it becomes for the officer a no-win scenario. Go ahead, Claire.
Well, I was just thinking about the situation I was in, which anybody can look up, but I was in a situation where I did have to chase someone that was holding a knife and was going to use it to stab someone else. So, and they did. And luckily I caught up to them, and that's when the shooting happened. However, I'm just thinking, in that situation, if there were a policy in place that is no chase policy, I mean, there is no policing done at that point. I mean, that guy that I chased, he would have just been let go at that point. I'm just confused. How does that work?
Well, you're not confused. You're answering that question. The reality is that, for every action, there's a reaction. So if you had not acted, it could have been a worse reaction. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying. With the policies in place now, they just run away with a knife and a phone and record you because you can't chase them?
Basically. You know, the other issue, again, is what does that do for your department? What does that do for the police officers that are sworn to protect and serve and protect? It sends a bad message because, again, all of us know within our careers, we know the guys at work, and we know the dog ass.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about those for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Guys that don't do shit are usually the ones that you see getting, all the accolades. And I've had guys tell me,
yeah,
you're doing shit. I'm waiting on the first and 16th. As opposed to those of us, I used to have an S on my chest. Jump through tall buildings as a single bomb. I took that shit off. My S now stands for citizen, spelled with an S, just so you know.
You know, Joe, I
have your own word.
But, I think when we go into, like we do on this show, for those of y'all listening, this is not a round table of cops on here. We give you that insight, that stuff if you don't know any officers, you're not going to hear from them. All of us are accessible. All of us are on Facebook. All of us can be reached. And you'll find there are people who do know all of us personally that will tell you what you see on this show. That is how they are. And we're going down this road, and, whistleblower protection, and what the chief talked about, Joe, what you inserted, what Claire just talked about. Now, I want to introduce something, and you two chiefs, I really want your input on this, and we'll get to the COVID thing if we get to it, because this is just a fast-moving, generating show, and that's how we do it. But I want to know, when we talk about whistleblower protection, I think this is staying. It needs to be a municipal concept from the officer on the street or the lady or man at the front desk type of reports all the way up to the city manager's office. Because it does no good for the officer to whistleblow and have his or her knees cut out from under them because the chief doesn't have a spine and surrenders to a city manager who's clueless to the needs of the city and beckons to the call of the city manager who's at the whims of the special interest. Hello, somebody. So it needs to be just like we want to do community policing, and I think we all universally recognize community policing. It's a contract between the citizens and the community, or between the police and the community, to solve community-related problems, provide for their quality of life. I think that the whistleblower protection needs to be the same. It needs to transcend just the police department, because we talked about it on here. We have good prosecutors who know about rotten-ass prosecutors. We know about good city politicians who know about rotten city politicians. So to just implement whistleblower protection within the policing, while it is great and it is good, if it doesn't become an all-encompassing concept of just what is quintessentially right, not Republican or Democrat or black or white, it is just right on its moral narrative, we never get anywhere, because we have rotten politicians that are sitting in positions that know of other rotten politicians but don't call them out. But they're writing the policies to transcend down the police department. Go ahead, Joe.
I would dare anyone to show me the last prosecutor or judge he got brought up on charges for not doing that job.
Never happened.
We'll wait.
That's my point. My point exactly. I mean,
yeah, never happened. It's not going to happen.
And yeah, so when we talk about police reform, then what else does that have to reform? The criminal justice system.
Is it going to
end with them? I highly doubt it.
No, it's a topic that's come up in previous shows. You know, we are the low-hanging fruit. We're the easiest ones to go after.
Right.
Even though it's a systemic issue, right? When we talk about criminal justice reform, all the way up to prosecutors, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff involved in this, and it's not just the police department. But we're easy to focus on. We're at that low hanging fruit, and that's what we're going to go after. When you start talking about elected officials and, you know, implementing a whistleblower protection program and your district attorney's office, that I'm not going to hold my breath.
You know,
but I do agree with Stan. It's got to be an organization-wide protection. And for those that may not have heard it, this is a city policy. This is not a police department policy. This is for the entire municipality. So whether you work the front desk, whether you're mowing the grass, whether you're a police officer, firefighter, library staff, this policy applies.
And, you know, Chief, if people are listening to this across the country and they're saying, well, what about my department? What do I do? Can y'all give us an example? And I'm going to reach out to him today, and hopefully we'll schedule and get him in on another show about this. But I've got an expert. If you want to talk about municipal corruption and the need for whistleblower, beyond policing, let's put policing on the shelf for a minute, because we're equal opportunity. We'll tear everybody's ass up on the shelf. You know, let's talk about these prosecutors and DA's offices and some of these judges. And fortunately, we're blessed to have a guy, Vic Fazell. I can call Vic, and Vic will say, give me a date and time, I'll be there. He's been here, and he's lived it, and he's proven it, and he can be Googled. Because we can't, you know, I personally refuse. I'm not an enemy of policing. I don't like cops. They're adrenaline junkies. But I'm an advocate for police officers who have compassion and empathy. And Vic is the type of person who can come on this show, and Vic takes no prisoners. He doesn't deal with Republican or Democrat or black or white. He deals, quite frankly, with what is right, which is what we deal with here. You may not like it. It may not make you feel comfortable. But that is what we deal with. Let me go to a caller real quick. 404 area code 2002. Good morning. What's up? Hello, caller. 404 area code 2002. You're on.
Yes, I don't want to talk.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll go ahead and press on. But, no, I mean, Vic's lived it, and he knows it. And he's not afraid to talk about it. And I want Joe, because I know we're at like 40 minute mark. I want to transition over into something, Joe, and you're probably, for all intents and purposes, the expert on this part. Because right now in Chicago, there's a big war battle over the vaccine mandates for first responders.
I have a question to follow up with that after Stan.
I mean, it's to me, it's a proverbial third rail. I understand to a degree the officers who don't want to get the vaccination. But for Stan, I know what it's like to get ready for work. And you get up, you put on your, if it's cold, you're putting on your thermals, you put on your uniform pads, you put on your shirt, then you put on your vest, then you put on your shirt, then you make sure you have all the little side items you might need and tucked in your pockets, then you put on this big heavy belt. It's got everything on it you need to survive or help someone. And you go check out your car, you make sure you're in-car dash camera works. You're making sure that your taser works. You're making sure that your body camera works. Everything is set. I'm ready to go out here. and I'm going to deal with multiple people, and I'm going to go through multiple calls with all kind of people, rich, poor, black, white, homeless, helpless, prostitutes, dead. I'm going to deal with the whole gamut. And at the end of the night, should I happen to make it home, and we've all worked that murder with that body that you gets in your uniform the rest of the day until you air that uniform out before you wash it. You smell like that body that you went to at 11, but you worked till 7 in the morning. But we go home and not going to take that vaccination. We carry all this crap we went through at work. We carry it home to our family. That's my opinion. I'm not saying the officer should or shouldn't. I'm saying I don't understand. It is to stand. I don't understand why you would not. You don't, and this is my opinion. I'm going to say this, and it's going to be the way it comes out of my mouth. You don't get to say, I shot this person, whether justified or not, because I was in fear of my life. But you won't take a vaccination to save your life. And with that, it's open.
My follow-up question would be, if you have no chase policy and you're having this issue with officers not getting vaccinated, which is also meaning that those officers are going to be fired and they're being put on probation for doing so, correct me if I'm wrong, how are you functioning? that's my question. How are you functioning? You have no chase policy and you're losing officers because they won't get vaccinated. How are you policing at all?
Okay.
As
of this morning, I believe there's only 21 officers that are put in no pay status. The argument for me is bullshit, because if you are a public sector employee, plain and simple, that's the reality. Now, do you have certain rights? Well, understand something. When you took this job, you lose certain rights. We've had this discussion, and people still to this day don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
When you become a police officer, you lose certain rights. Let me tell you what they are. You lose the right to free speech. You can't say what you want to say now as a police officer. You can't. Now, you can argue all you want, but don't take the job. Do you lose the right to free association? Yes, you lose the right. Because you're not supposed to hang out with fellas. So, again, if you don't like it, leave. You lose the right to non-search because, in theory, those lockers in those buildings belong to who? So you do lose certain rights. And they don't, certain groups don't understand it. The argument here made by the head of the union is nonsensical. He's basing it on what he believes is an issue of collective bargaining. Healthcare is not a collective bargaining right, not in the public sector. If you're working for Google or Apple or private sector, you got an argument. But as a public sector employee, you are charged to protect the public. And in that, if you're not protected, you can't protect them. Now, the other argument that they had was, we don't want the city to know what our status is. Duh. Well, they've got to know your status. If you're working in certain units, they've got to know what you're doing. I mean, you could be in an undercover unit. You could be anything. You've got to know. Our public, our nurse, we have nurses that work here, and they've got to see people. So shouldn't you be vaccinated? Shouldn't you want to? The argument that it changes, I mean, just so you know, the argument has been made that this vaccine changes DNA. Now, let me just say that again. As you can see, I'm scratching my head because I'm sitting in front of Starfleet Command. That was some Starfleet Command shit. Let's be very clear. The argument that this guy is making, you know, they're saying hold the line. That's a new mantra, hold the line. Hold the what fucking line? There's no line to hold.
There's a 21-person line, so I guess they're holding that.
Here's a guy that says, we're going to hold the line. But now he tells, oh, I'm vaccinated. So, but you're not in a no-pay status. You're the president of the union. So you still get paid. So what about those 21 people that you just told to hold the line? I don't get it.
Yeah, and it's different here in Texas because there's actually a state mandate that you can't require the vaccine. So we're trying to figure out how we're going to work around that. I don't know the full 100% who has been, who hasn't been, but fairly confident the majority of people within the organization have been. So we're still at we've got another level above us that does the mandate. So we're having to operate under that rule as it stands right now. So I have a tendency degree, and the questions that are coming out about the vaccine and, what people are, some of it, questioning it, as far as the efficiency and what does it do and the testing and all that. And I'll say that I'm vaccinated, so I don't think my DNA has changed. But the mere fact that there are other vaccines that were required or are required in order for you to go to school, to go to many other places or be employed, this is an issue that will end up getting resolved at some point that I believe will fall back in place, like, meningitis and polio and all this kind of stuff. So, we're in a little different place in Texas than say Illinois that deals with those mandates.
But Chief, if I were to introduce this and ask this question, because it will come up, I guarantee you this is going to come up. What happens when a household or an individual now sues the city because their loved one died of COVID or was exposed to COVID because of an officer? Some we see who just don't wear masks anymore, and it's not like they're different. We got people in the community that think everything's over, no mask. But when they now want to sue the city and go, you came to my house, you wouldn't wear a mask. You were unvaccinated. When you left, three members of my household caught COVID and died. Here comes this humongous, monumental lawsuit, and it's going to come somewhere in America. Trust me, it's going to come. What does the city do then? And more importantly, what does the police union do then? Because that is the power structure that the cities are afraid of, is the union. And so, I mean, it's going to come, and within the next couple of months, trust me, there will be a lawsuit filed because officers responded, they did not wear a mask, and then it was determined that these officers were not vaccinated, but they're in a public service capacity, much like McDonald's said all of our workers will wear a mask or be vaccinated, and I'm just using McDonald's as an example. I don't know it to be true, but small private sectors have said to work here, you're going to be vaccinated. Now, Texas, you are just a crazy-ass state where your governor, Governor Deals on Wheels, says that private businesses can't do that. I don't know how that's going to stand up in court, but that's just what's been put in place. But when these lawsuits start flying around, particularly in regards to police, fire, and first responders, and the city, the taxpayers now have to pay these lawsuits. And what I want to say to the individual officers, yes, we risk our lives for the public all the time. And I'm not knocking their right to be vaccinated or not be vaccinated. Do whatever you want to do. But I am saying there's going to be fallout if you choose not to be vaccinated, that it's going to impact your city. It's going to impact your citizens. And some of them don't want to get vaccinated for crazy reasons. But there's going to be a point, there's going to be a case somewhere here in the near future. Mark my words, on this show, we are never far off. And within the next 30 days, you will see a lawsuit filed somewhere where somebody is claiming, and it'll probably be in Chicago, that my family contracted COVID, my mother, grandfather, father, daughter, son, whatever, died as a result of COVID. And you as the city sent two unvaccinated officers to my house.
Well, think about this. And again, I know it's going to be a far swing, but think about this. They've got charges for criminal transmission of HIV. So why wouldn't they put into place the fact that you are now a carrier? You might as well be Typhoid Mary while it's quite fun, but it's true. I mean, so why wouldn't they or someone attempt to sue on those grounds?
And Joe, and I gotta say this, and once again, we talk about things that the community will listen to us, and you know, they're learning from us and things they didn't know sometimes. But officers who listen to us know to be true. You know, all of us have worked that June, July, and August, and God, Lord have mercy, June, July, August in Texas, it's hot as hell. You get out the shower, put on a T-shirt, you hadn't even gotten fully dressed yet, your T-shirt's already wet, now you're putting this bulletproof vest on. You know you're going to be hot the rest of the day. You know you are. And you're out there in boots because we don't know what we're going to be in. That's why for those of you who wonder why do they wear boots when it's so hot, we can go from a sidewalk to a swamp in a heartbeat. So you got all this equipment on, and you spend 10, 12 hours. You are uncomfortable as hell. But you know what? You suck it up. You take that discomfort because I never know when I'll need these boots or this vest. We have a belt full of tools. Yes, we get sick of carrying it. And the longer you go in your profession, I think all of you will agree with me, the longer people go in their profession, you watch their belt, you can tell how many years they have in the department by what's on their belt. When we came out to the academy, we had so much stuff on the belt. We had things in our back pockets, knives in our vests. We had all that. As you go forward, you go from four sets of handcuffs to two. You know, your belt kind of whittles down because, A, you've developed a relationship and a rapport and experience, hopefully if you're a good officer, and you know how to interact with that public. You know what you need. You tend to carry what you need, and you consider your comfort. But you're still uncomfortable. Riding in those cars with all that crap, you're sitting in a car. Those of you who've ever had your iPhone in your back pocket sitting in your car and it pinches up into your back, you immediately know, let me get this phone out. You sit it up there in the cup holder or whatever. We got a gun over here and an aspartame poking into your side and handcuffs pinching into your back. But you do it. Why? I have to survive. So when I heard this whole Chicago thing, I don't care whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. I don't care. Do what you do. But don't light up my Facebook with calling all prayer warriors. I stand talking. I'm not trying to hear it. I don't want to hear it. But you can do what you want. But when you catch COVID or you transmit it to these citizens you care, you protect and serve about, you pick up the paper and find out that this 70-year-old lady has now died of COVID, and you got to live the rest of your career and say, man, I worked a call at her house last week. Nice lady. Gave me a bottle of water. Was good. Are we doing everything we can? If we really want to be the heroes that we put ourselves out there to be and that society puts us out to be more so than we do ourselves, if we really want to say we sacrifice, we do this for the community, why is something so small as this? Over 600,000 Americans are dead. Not on ventilators, not recovery. They are $10 F-word dead. And you don't want to take a shot. And to these people, it'll alter my DNA. I'll tell you, Stan's opinion, if it alters your DNA, you ought to be first in line. Because some of the folks that are doing this job and I've worked with, some folks I've seen, your DNA could use a little shake-up.
Hey, Joe, has Illinois added COVID-19 to the list for in-line duty deaths for officers?
Not yet. I don't know. I got to be quite honest. I would think, based on their standards, they're not going to. Way I understood line of duty deaths and action being performed as opposed to a disease. It's interesting. I think we've got at least 10 officers that have died because of COVID. And for the head of the FOP to say We don't want to do it. We don't want to tell you guys. I have a problem with that. I mean,
but, well, Texas actually has added COVID-19 to the in a line of duty deaths in this last legislative session. And I think I bring that up. That's the reason why I ask, because I think that's where that's where this is going to turn as far as vaccination. You know, they've made it one of the I don't know how many there are, but one of the reasons how you can receive the state and or federal. I don't know federal level yet. I'm not aware of the federal level, but at least state benefits as an in the line of duty death. Now they did it retroactively. My thought process of why they did it is because when COVID first hit, there were many people, one, they didn't have access to the vaccine, right, because it wasn't developed yet. And so we had public safety officers and correction officers passing away because they got COVID, even though we didn't really know what it was at that point early on. So they made it retroactive. And I think that's where the sticking point in Texas is going to be, because now you have it as to receive benefits. So I don't know if at some time an argument could or will be made. Did you do everything in your power to not contract COVID-19 in order to receive those state benefits of in the line of duty death? I think that's a question that's going to be raised at some point. They also, going back to what Stan was talking about in Texas, the legislature created what they call a quarantine leave, and every city that has police and fire and EMS was required by, I think, September 1st or something to adopt this new quarantine leave policy. And it's presumptive. It's presumptive that if a public safety first responder tests positive for COVID, it's presumed that they got it on the job.
Wow.
So hear me. They presume that you received it while at work. And so that eliminates the contact tracing, and you're automatically given 10 days of administrative leave with pay.
You know, Chief,
not against your balance, sick time, or anything like that on the city's dime.
You know, Chief.
So with that in place in Texas, I think that again is going to raise a question about, and there's going to be an attorney or somebody down the road that's going to raise this issue about vaccination because you receive those benefits. So it's a little different here. I applaud the legislature for taking care of the officers and the firefighters in that context, but you know it's going to raise a question at some point in time.
And, you know, Chief, I applaud Texas on that particular note. I absolutely do. You know, but I'm going to say about what I'm going to say, I'm going to give Texas some credit. But that is a batshit crazy state. I love the people there. I love my Texans. I love you guys. But it's crazy. But I got to say something that I learned during my recent trip back there from someone that, and I love being there. I missed a lot of people. It's great to be back and see a lot of people. But I got to give, and I can't speak for the state because I didn't go there and try to figure out what the hell everything Texas was doing, because they're in the news so much I didn't have the time, quite frankly. But I got to give the city of Waco a lot of credit, because I don't know the specifics, so please don't take what I'm going to tell you as gospel, but it came from a good source. You know, someone who I have been talking about, first responder in the police department and personal friend of mine, get vaccinated. And this person told me they finally did. And what I was really proud of, because forever I'll be a part of the city of Waco. Whether I'm there or not, I will always be a part of them. Whether some of them like it or not, I will be. But what I loved is they told me that the city of Waco, and when I talk about being forward and progressive and moving forward in how you look at your employees and address issues, this person, they had an option, and I believe the way they explained it to me was they could get 40 hours of sick time added. That's a work week. It means a lot. They could get 40 hours of vacation added, or they could cash it out at the end of the year and get that money. And for the city to be that progressive and that forward-thinking concept, you know, I'm going to say, and I don't have a lot to positive say about Texas politics. I really don't, because like I said, y'all are batshit crazy there. You know, with Governor Deals on Wheels, that's just me. But for the city to step away and for a moment say, we got policemen and firemen that are going to all manner of bullshit at all hours of the night in all manner of situations. Some are questionable about vaccines. Some may have a good reason why they shouldn't take them. Some just don't know and just don't want to take it. Let's give them something meaningful. They didn't say 10 hours, a free day off, 40 hours. That's an entire work week of sick leave you now have that you normally don't have. That's extra that you can cash in. So I got to give them a kudo on that. Go ahead, Joe.
I guess there was a program last year that paid for your federal program, and now it's collapsed. But as far as I know, in Illinois, there is no such animal like that. I mean, I would applaud it. I mean, that takes guts. Because 10 days is still 10 days. And 10 days without pay, it can hurt even more. So now you're forcing people to take action. What do you expect them to do? I mean, you talk about feeding, you know, I got to feed my family. What do you expect me to do?
And, you know, Joe, and if I could say anything to these big cities like Chicago, Detroit, Miami, Houston, Dallas, Los Angeles, I don't want to hear this bullshit of, well, we're dealing with millions of people and we're dealing with 5,000 officers. You know what you're dealing with that Chief Devlin doesn't have? A big-ass budget, okay?
That's right.
You also have resources there.
Amen.
So let's hit that point. Joe doesn't have those resources over there. So when you tell me, well, we deal with so much, have pity on us. We can't do what Waco did. We can't do what Hewitt did. That's semantical bullshit. Because you know what you have that Waco and Hewitt doesn't have? You got a humongous-ass staff that's bigger than any shift of officers you put on the street. You have resources. You have a billion. We're not talking about a $1 million budget. You have a multiple billion-dollar budget that you're dealing with, and that's bullshit. And I think that these city managers, these mayors, these big chiefs who enjoy the big paychecks, they enjoy all the extravagant events. If you give a damn about your officers and you give a damn about your city, I'll tell you what, you don't have to get a secretary. You're not going to get the runaround. Why don't you pick up the phone and call Chief Devlin? Why don't you pick up the phone and call Joe Mosley? Find out what they're doing. Find out why what they're doing is working. And guess what? You take what they did on their little budgets and take the same amount of energy you put into the, we're going from a fish fry to a full bonus surf and turf meal, put those resources into that and make it work for your people. It's possible. See, this is why we do this show. You don't get to hide behind, well, we have 2.8 million people. You simply don't understand. I don't care if Keith Devlin has 20,000 people. He put the policy in over here. It's working. Why don't you look at what he's got that's working and say, how can we take this, put it on steroids, and make it work for us? Well, I don't know. Well, let's call Chief Devlin, Jim Devlin. Y'all can look him up. He's not hard to find. Joe Mosley, he's not hard to find. The answer is not in the big departments. It's in the small departments that are making it work that aren't always on YouTube with these crazy-ass videos, whose officers do give a damn, who when their officers go out in the street, guess what? The citizens know them by name. They're the officers that you don't see the First Amendment auditors always tearing up their city. Why? Because those people love that department. Why? They don't like every little officer there and every little thing. I don't like every little thing about Waco PD, but I'll tell you one thing I do love about Waco PD. When the rubber meets the road, they're going to take care of them citizens. They're going to make decisions to take care of those officers, which is evident in their COVID policy. I wish they would put it on a billboard, plaster it, put it on YouTube, put it out to the world, because you have an answer that some medium-sized department just like you across America is searching for. You've done it. Advertise. Pat yourself on the back. Put it out there. Chief Devlin, whistleblower. Nobody's doing what he does. And if you missed this show today, you can say, I live in twisted Root, Louisiana, or I live in Los Angeles, California, and we're struggling with something. And here's a man, chief of police in Hewitt, Texas, that came here with the answer. We've been talking about whistleblowing on this show, y'all know it, for 5 years. 5 years. And here's a chief from Hewitt, Texas. Some of y'all go, I don't know where the hell that is. Look it up. It doesn't matter where it's at. It doesn't matter how big it is. You know what does matter? When he implemented it, his city said, we're on board, let's do it. His citizens said, let's go for it. The officer said, I like that. And if you got a billion-dollar budget, don't come tell me you can't do what you know, Chief Devlin did in his small city. That's bullshit.
But you know what we're fighting? I think the common thing that nobody really wants to talk about is this thing called misinformation. Misinformation and disinformation is at an all-time high. I just read a book called Gossip Men. It's about how World War II, the Germans had started a disinformation campaign and almost crippled the United States. So in response to it, the United States and England got together and started their own disinformation campaign, which actually led to them using a dead body to float up fake papers for the raid at Nuremberg. Well, not Nuremberg, but Normandy. So the whole idea that gossip should not be challenged is another issue. We don't do our due diligence, and misinformation is killing more of our people than anything. Misinformation and disinformation. Do your due diligence. I mean, if you don't want to get the shot, have a good reason for it. But don't say that it changes DNA. Don't say that, you know, this is because some other group wants me to have it and make me a slave again. I mean, some of the stuff I've heard is just, I mean, with ratchet thoughts after listening to some of the bullshit. But for those in the public sector, there are certain things you have to do. And if you don't want to do it, get out. Plain and simple. That's all it is to it. I mean, if you don't want to, you know, don't come around and talk about, I want to serve the people, but I don't want to serve for the people or of the people, by the people. Hypocrisy there. But complete hypocrisy. And they still start dealing with this disinformation campaign, we're still going to be fucked up.
You know, Joey, if you're, and this is Stan's opinion, if you don't want to go deal, I spoke with a nurse, a friend of mine. In fact, when I flew back from Waco to Atlanta, I went up to Dallas the night before and stayed with Nick Novello, friend of the show, and his wife. I stayed with them, and then I had a friend of mine I knew from a little baby that's now a nurse in Dallas. It wanted to pick me up and take me to breakfast and take me to the airport before I left. And we talked. She's an ER nurse. And I asked her, I said, you know, Tara, let me ask you, how many of these COVID people unvaccinated that you're dealing with? Her answer to me was all of them. And she's talking about the ventilator. I'm about to die, people. I said, well, let me ask you this. How many of them say I was wrong or maybe I should have got the vaccination or I wish I could? She said all of them. And I asked her, I said, you know, well, how do you forget them for a minute. How do you take all that home as a ER nurse who wants to save lives and help people who won't help themselves? How do you swallow that? Her response to me was, I don't know. I just try to get through it.
Well, I'm going to say we talk about mental health for officers. You wait as we start to wind down on COVID. It's going to be a big issue.
Chief, I mean,
our staff.
It just, it has to be. And I don't want anybody to get Stan wrong. Because all of us you see on here, we're individuals. We say our part, and so don't blame anybody else for what Stan says. I own what I say. But, and this is Stan's opinion. I listened to the Howard Stern interview. I don't know how many other people heard it in reference to COVID. If you don't want to take the shot, that's fine. You don't want to trust the science, or religious beliefs or whatever, I'm not going to argue with you. I don't hate you. I'm not going to try to convince you. You do you. But when you sprain your ankle and you run to the hospital to get a CAT scan, x-ray, all this science that you trust, when you have a heart attack, when you got a medicine cabinet full of medicine, hello, science, chemistry. Joe, if I'm wrong, last time I said chemistry, science, you're taking all these pills, but you don't trust your shot. People who have religious beliefs, I'm not going to knock that. You know, you believe it's the mark of the devil is coming out in the shot. Do whatever. That's you do you. But I think when you are a first responder and you're going into unknown situations, constantly dealing with unknown people, whether they're homeless, in a home, rich home, poor home, whatever, and you have the potential to walk away from that incident, not just transport that virus to someone else that may be unvaccinated, but chances are, if you refuse to take the vaccine, your household has refused to take the vaccine. And right now, where we are in America, your children aren't vaccinated. So when that happens, you know, don't be the purveyor of, you know, I need prayers, thoughts and prayers, and you know, calling all prayer warriors. This virus is real. And Chief Devlin had to go because he had another event. He told me he would have it, and we're about to wrap up here, but I appreciate everybody. And we're going to go around and get, you know, get last words, and, you know, because we threw this show together because we all agreed we've just refused to miss 2 weeks in a row. So we're here, and Claire, let me go up to you. Come on in here.
Yeah, I was just going to say on the COVID note that, in my opinion, of course, this is nobody else's opinion here, but in my opinion, I feel like if you're willing to take the honor of saying that you're going to serve and protect the public, then you should serve that public by getting the shot and protect the public by wearing a mask or getting the shot. That's just my opinion. But I feel like if that's the oath that you're taking, that you're going to serve and protect, and that's what you're going to stand by, that includes taking a vaccination. And like Chief Mosley said, some of those rights are those rights that you're going to have to give up because you told you swore that you would serve and protect. And I think, in my opinion, that's just one of those things that you have to honor.
And, you know, I'm glad you said that, Claire, because it reminds me, for those of us who are veterans, or served in the military, we took a shitload of shots all the time. And when I say walk the gauntlet, if you've been in the military, you know what I mean when I say walk the gauntlet. Where there were people with those guns on both sides of you, and you walked out and you got those shots. And if you went to Desert Storm and you're saying, I'm not going to take the shot because I don't trust it, that is bullshit. Because we got shot up with so much stuff going to Desert Storm that we didn't know why you're in the military, not your job to know, take the shot, move forward, two steps forward to do. And that was a fact. And we all seem to have made it okay. Besides Desert Storm Syndrome, and that wasn't caused by the vaccines, that was anthrax, and we can go down that rabbit hole another time. But, you know, when you talk about true service and those men and women in the military who stepped up and took those shots, we didn't know what was in them. But the two things we didn't want to do is, A, we didn't want to get blown up or shot, and B, we didn't want to die of some local strain of disease that was going to kill us. Why? Because we wanted to come home. And so that's just how I feel about it. And Joe, you get to take us out of here, and you get to wrap us up. I appreciate you, brother, as always.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but okay. Thanks, Claire. Let me again parrot the line that take the shot. You know, you took an oath, even as a police officer, to defend the Constitution of the state, of the country. It's the same. Part of that oath is protecting those who we are to serve. Also, again, understanding that your oaths of office come with certain caveats. certain rights and certain provisions. One of those is to protect, again, I digress, protect the people that we are duly sworn to protect and serve. If you don't agree with that, you have the option to go get another job, quite frankly. You know, it's like there was a lawsuit here in Illinois where a correctional officer was a member of the KKK, and he had a tattoo on his arm. Well, a couple of inmates saw that, and they complained to their higher-ups. Long story short, the guy got fired, which he should have. But the state's position, as well as the Supreme Court, was, yeah, you have a right to your opinion. You don't have a right to a public sector job, because how can you protect somebody that you hate? You know, he came back and said, well, I don't do this at my job. Well, that's not being firm. You wore this tattoo to arouse people who are, you know, going to be there for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
They have a right to, you know, as much as it can be, they have a right to be safe too.
Mm-hmm.
When you're saying that you don't like them, why would you want the job? So that being said, I yield my time to the great Stan.
Thank you. Get it right now. Get it right now.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, you know what? I tell you, Joe, it's been a good week. Busy week. My wife and I moved and got settled in, and then I went to Waco. And I got to say before I leave, you know, I grew up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and that's home for me. But at 18, I left Harrisburg. But I spent 27, 28 years in Waco. That was my mother's home. And I'll tell you, I got there Monday at about 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and I got out and just walked around within a couple of blocks, and just seeing people who had not seen me in 2.5 years come from across the street and come up and give me a hug and want to take pictures. And then as I come into the hotel in the morning, and people who knew me, saw me, and recognized me. And I'll tell you, you know, it ain't about me or image. When you live, when you do this job and you retire and all the plaques on the wall can get dusty and all the articles and attaboys are, that you got in the folder, they get brown and start to get crumply. You know, I mean, you sometimes wonder, did I make a difference? And when these people come up to me and remember me and thank me and wanted to hug me, and they didn't have no money. These are people that folks would consider the least. There, I left Waco, and I never got a chance to see all the people I wanted to see. I didn't want to have an event somewhere, and I'm going to be here where everybody can come, because I didn't want something to happen and I get blamed for it. But there are a lot of y'all I wanted to see, but I still miss you. But when I got on that plane and I'm coming back to Atlanta, you know, it was the first time in my 2.5 years now being retired where I said, you know, when you say it's right in my soul, I said, I did it right. I didn't make everybody happy, but I did it right. To the officers out there that are coming into this job, and you're trying to figure out what it's all about, and the ones who have been in it kind of your middle of the road, and you think you've arrived, and the ones who say, I've been here so long and I'm done, as you do unto the least of those people, not the ones who look like you or vote like you or the ones you like or dress like you, but the least. To the midnight officers, you know, I worked midnight, so I understand. We don't have resources. We don't have a lot that we can give to the community. But you know what? You're all the community has at 2 in the morning. Can you fix their problem? No, you can't. Are they looking for you to tell them what to do? No, they're not. You know what? A lot of these people on midnight just struggling. All they want is somebody to listen. And you'd be amazed when you just listen to them. not criticize, not mock. Give them time to vet. Nobody gets shot. Nobody gets arrested. And then they come up to you 2 or 3 weeks later and say, man, I know I called you this when you came. I knew I couldn't fix it. You couldn't fix it. I know. It's my fault. But, man, you're the first person that ever listened to me, because you may be the last person that sees them before they say the world doesn't care. And they go into their garage or their bedroom or do a murder-suicide. We don't have to be heroic. We don't have to make an arrest. We don't have to be on social media. Something as simple, I believe that 60% of the people in the world today, they want to be heard, not argued with. They don't want to debate. We're tired of debates. They want to be heard. They just want somebody to listen to them and not critique them, not fight back against what they said. And that's what we try to do here. And we threw this show together real quick. I got back yesterday. Joe said, I'll be there. She said, I got something, but I'll be there. And Claire's here. And that's what we do here. It's not a black show, a white show, a police show, a Republican, Democrat. That's the manical bullshit that we quite simply hear. If you listen to the show, we don't care about. If you call 646-716-4621, you don't have to agree with any of us here. But if you believe in you and your point, and you're respectful, you can stay here the whole show and interact, because that's what we do. And before I close out, does anybody have any last remarks?
Well, I agree with everything you said. Claire, I'm checking your ID next week because you look too young.
And you're just jealous because you're too old.
Oh,
never lie.
You know, but you know what, y'all? I'm glad you called that out, because I'll tell people, you know, if you come for Claire, because we have trolls, if you come for Claire and you're one of these officers, well, I've been 17 years and she doesn't know what she's talking about. She needs 17 years to go through the nightmare that most officers don't want to go through. And not only was she brilliant enough and courageous enough, and that's the part, enough to say, this job isn't for me. It's not that I can't handle it. She responded to it and was initiated a shooting, justified. You don't handle anything better than that. But Claire stepped away from all of that and said, this isn't for me. Let me go find where I can be better useful and carry this experience with me.
That's a hero.
Exactly. So for Joe, you took the words out of my mouth, because I was getting ready to say, for all you heroes out here with badges and guns, they can't wait to be in the shooting, want to always be around the shooting, be close to the shooting, Google her. She'll talk to you. You want to know what really goes on behind the scenes? The loneliness? She talked about it when she came to the show. You really want to go there? You want to live that nightmare?
You don't want to be the hero. It's not a real... It's a facade. It's a fake thing that it's this fake badge of honor that people put on you. Yet it's not a badge at all. And I think the thing that surprises me the most, and the reason that I left was because I decided to choose my mental health. And the thing that surprises me the most is that even after the George Floyd incident, is that mental health for police officers still isn't implemented. And I don't understand that. I can never get behind that. I can't. Because if mental health is such a big issue that everybody needs it, then everybody needs it. I mean, and these are officers that are going out, and they may have been in shooting. That they may have been through the worst of the worst, and they went back. Or they didn't, like me. But either way, I'm still getting mental health treatment for something that happened 2 years ago. So where are those men and women at now that did go through shooting, went back to the range, got requalified, went back out on the streets, and now they're just responding to normal calls like everybody else.
You know, Claire, that we got to do another show on it. We talked about mental health.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said here recently, you know, to someone, you know, when we talk about police officer safety, and if my statistics are off, I'll apologize, but at last check, over 160 officers have taken their lives this year since January. 160, significantly under officers killed in the line of duty, including traffic accidents. Yet the police unions remain silent on pushing Congress for mental health. Locally, they're not pushing their politicians for mental health. The chiefs speak on it when it becomes a talking point and they're pressed to do so by city management. City management doesn't give a damn about the police officer mental health because they're not beating the bandwagon down by instituting programs. And at the end of it all, the officers are suffering. So, I mean, we've done 7 shows. That is 14 hours that we on this show, we have given to police officer suicides and mental health, which I would hazard a guess to say it is probably more time than 50% of your middle to lower income police departments nationwide in this country in training to their officers. And we're going to keep hammering that because as long as good men and women are dying because they give up, we will always push it. But I appreciate you guys for being here today. We're going to get out of here. Good show, as always. Love you guys. Everybody stay safe. Joe, I'm going to have to get me a vest, man. I'm rocking the Rock Ready printing, baby. Waco, Texas.
Yeah, if I put it on, I look like Malcolm X because I'll stretch it.
I look like Buddha.
All right, man.
All right, everybody have a good evening. We're out.
Later.
Hey, Claire, tell them we say what's up, dog.
Well, do.
All right. Bye-bye.